So, 9/11. We're going to look at 9/11 evidence. Evidence which indicates there were no large Boeing crashes at the World Trade Center. Evidence for the use of some type of directed energy weapon being used to destroy most of the World Trade Center complex. We'll also look at the 9/11 cover-up, my initial involvement with 9/11, truth activities, and how I became involved with the 9/11 Scholars Group, which somebody else here in the audience mentioned to me that they'd also got involved with this group a few years ago. We're also going to look at something that has hardly ever discussed by anybody talking about 9/11 anywhere, and that's the link to the energy cover-up, free energy for the world. It's linked to 9/11. Evidence that there is an active and ongoing effort to cover up and discredit research into directed energy weapons, DEW, GEW, and no planes. There were no real plane crashes on 9/11, folks. I'm crazy, aren't I? And some of those individuals undertaking the cover-up, I'm going to name some of those people, and there are many. They are legion, in fact. Now, the pancake collapse theory is what you'll hear. Going to exclusively talk about the World Trade Center, really. Well, yeah, pretty much, really. Official story for the World Trade Center is the aircraft collision created a fire which melted the steel, or softened the steel. The melting of steel caused trusses in the buildings to weaken. The steel beam softened, and the building underwent a pancake collapse. Bump, 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 bump. Each floor fell onto the next, increasing weight of the floors caused a catastrophic structural failure. This graphic, whoops, is from the BBC website. I think it's still there. There's the page. This is actually incorrect. We're not talking about melting steel because, as you'll see, that melting didn't happen. That's just a distraction. But on the BBC website, they say that fire reaches 600 C, hot enough to melt steel supports. It's not true. That is wrong. It's 1500. So that is wrong anyway. Free fall destruction of World Trade Center buildings 1 and 2. This is the physics. I posted this on the PhysOrg Physics Forum in September 2005. The towers were approximately 1,350 feet tall. They were actually 1,362 and 1,368 feet, according to the most accurate sources. One tower, in quotes, collapsed. We're told it collapsed. It actually did not collapse. I'll come back to that. In about 10 seconds, the second tower collapsed in about 8.1 seconds. These events are recorded on video and they're indisputable. No theory, no conspiracy. I'm not talking about who did it, nothing like that. I'm talking about what happened. If you want to find out who did it, who committed a crime, you've got to find out what happened. More facts. The towers were of an extremely strong construction. Look at these steel beams here. Don't be fooled by the tinfoil exterior, which was fitted later. There were 47 enormous interior steel columns around here. These bits sticking up in the middle here. There were 236 exterior steel columns. And two towers. As we will see later, the towers did not collapse. The laws of motion dictate how objects travel when they are acted on by the force of gravity. The time calculated for free fall of an object, 9.16 seconds, is close to the actual measured time of the, quote, collapse, which they didn't collapse, 8 and 10 seconds approximately. This indicates the towers encountered no resistance as they came apart. A pancake collapse, the official explanation, would have meant there was an amount of resistance as each floor impacted the one below. This would have increased the collapse time. Now, here's some of the physics. These are the one of the equations of motion. S equals ut plus half at squared. Rearrange that when u is 0. T equals root 2s over a. And if you put in the figures for the World Trade Center, you get a collapse time of 9.16 seconds. It is impossible for a building to fall through itself as quickly as it falls through thin air. It's like those buildings weren't even there when they started their demise. This is actually what happened. These pieces are trailing dust. You watch again. In fact, you're going to see it even more clearly now. This is actual news footage from the day, and there are about seven or eight different angles of this happening. And I've got about three different ones here. This is 70 stories high, 700 feet. There's World Trade Center 7. That's 47 stories high. Did you see what happened to that? You'll see it again on this one, just afterwards. That is not a collapse. The word collapse was used from the moment it happened. But as you can see here, and there are other videos as well, I've just edited a few together. The last one is the clearest of all, I think. So remember, this is what happened. I'm not talking about conspiracy theories, this is evidence. And there were thousands of people saw this. This is why it's so clear cut. We've got hundreds of witness testimonies, thousands of photographs, at least 40,000 pictures. These pieces here, turning to dust. The actual chunks are turning to dust as they fall. I think this is the very clearest of all. There's 70 stories again of unsupported steel here. There it's left. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. What's causing that to happen? Now, I think there'll be a few people in this room have seen that, but that is never talked about. That shot is never talked about. Disintegrates. And that's actually what's happening. Molecular dissociation. That's steel. You saw the construction. What you're looking at is technology in action, folks. Do you think that's a collapse? Is that a building that's collapsing? This was a 40-story building. It's also now gone, the Bankers Trust. So this, looking straight across, the destruction wave is about 40 stories there to the ground. World Trade Center, anyone know how high it was? In stories? 110 stories. So we've got 70 stories of building have already disappeared. You think you've got 70 stories in this thing here? And what does that look like to you? Is that bursting into flames? Have we got bombs going off? You know? What the hell's going on here? Is that collapsing? Is it on fire? Or would you agree with me that it's turning to dust? This is a still shot of the same event. That's just from exactly the same time as the video, but it's a sequence of stills. Is it burning up? Is it slamming to the ground? Is it pancaking down, or is it turning to dust? I'll leave you to decide. I know what I can see happening. These slides were originally done by Dr. Judy Wood, my friend, who's written the book about this. And she's a former professor of mechanical engineering. So now we've got a bit of a problem, because actually if we look at what happened, there is an enormous problem. This building here is, again, World Trade Center building number 7. That's 47 stories high. And that was destroyed, as some of you may know, on 9/11. A lot of people talk about that. Building number 7 wasn't hit by a plane. That proves it was a conspiracy, etc., etc. But, let's go back to that. We know that that was destroyed at 5:20 in the evening. So this picture here, with the firemen in the foreground, that was taken before 5:20 in the evening. Probably, judging by the angle of the sun, maybe noon, 1 o'clock, something like that. That's an 8-story building. That's the same 8-story building. What happened to the 110 stories, folks? Oh, steel was shipped to China, you'll read on the internet. Really? Steel was shipped to China? What, you mean all that steel was shipped to China in 2 hours 1 hour, 2.5 hours. No. That's a conspiracy cover story. That's a diversion. That's to get you to look away from the evidence, the obvious evidence. And there are other pictures. I'm focusing on this one, but there are many other pictures and videos. The building disappeared into dust. That's a picture, I think, taken next day or a couple of days later. Curiously, we can see all these buildings around the World Trade Center are intact. They're not seriously damaged. You've got a few ding marks and things. This is from Dr. Judy Wood's book. She annotated them all. World Trade Center 1 and 2 are completely gone. World Trade Center 6 has a big hole in the middle. That's World Trade Center 5 there. World Trade Center 6, I think this one here, is at 8. But I'm not that familiar with the layout of the site. But one of the buildings got cut in half. Dr. Judy Wood has a brilliant presentation on this. You can watch it online. I've got DVDs over there if anybody wants to see the full presentation. Only buildings with the World Trade Center complex were destroyed on 9/11. All the others were fine. This is the 47th story World Trade Center 7. Look how neat the demolition was. In quotes. People say it was a controlled demolition. People on the internet, the conspiracy groups. Well, not really. Not in the sense of putting bombs in it. It barely went across the street. 47 story steel building. If it had undergone controlled demolition, which it didn't, just looked like that, it would have been the tallest building ever done with that technique. It was virtually silent. In fact, you've got a couple of video clips that you can hear where there's somebody doing an interview in the street, talking to somebody, and then about three blocks away, World Trade Center 7 is going down. And they're still having a normal conversation. And they're going, whoa, 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 look at that. There's no sound. No bombs going off. Now, this is near World Trade. In fact, you can see this same, if I go back to this picture, look. There's that pile, look. Well, look at this. This was here's building 7 here, still standing. This is on the morning of 9/11. And this is after. What the hell has happened to this bus? Look at it. Why is it like this? Why is this all mangled up? But look, in this one it's even more mangled. Look at the rear end here. How this has all got mangled up. And it's moved. Here's the tree, look. Can you see? It's moved forwards. How's that happened? But you've never seen that picture. I only saw this picture quite recently. Never heard about this, did you? wasn't a real plane crash. See if I can get this to play. Hang on. Let's go back a bit, sorry. I just have to click on it. So the guy that took the video that you saw, that iconic video, can't even talk about it. He will not talk about it. Why would that be? I don't know the answer, but it's mighty strange. Some more problems with the stories of the plane crashes. This is in the NIST report. This picture is in the NIST report. How can this inflated tyre have survived that fireball that you saw, the resulting fireball? And this thing here, as Dr. Wood has pointed out, that's not a fracture from a crash. That's been sawn through. The damage isn't consistent with the actual event. And also you can see if you study this satellite image, this was taken a couple of days after 9/11, or the 12th or the 13th, you can actually see these pieces here, except this piece which appears to have been planted. This piece of fuselage. This was seen on this picture with circular holes in the tops of the building. Why would there be circular holes in the tops of the buildings at the World Trade Center? This is World Trade Center number 5. 24-foot diameter hole and smaller diameter hole here. What's that about? Where are they coming from? How can aluminium and light materials crash through solid steel girders? What would happen if you fired a 44 Magnum bullet denser and faster than a Boeing at a steel girder? Would it slice through it? Would it ricochet off? What do you think? This is sliced through it. Aluminium wings, quarter-inch aluminium wing struts, travelling at allegedly at 532 miles an hour, according to the NIST report. A speed impossible at 700 feet above sea level for that type of plane, because of the density of the air. Can you see any plane parts? Bits of tail, bits of fuselage, bits of seats. bits of... Can you see any recognisable part of a plane sticking out, protruding out, hanging off? You can't. Now, I've only shown you a very... I'm skipping through this quite quickly because there's a lot to cover. The number of videos released, especially a video called September Clues in 2007, which I was quite enthusiastic about at the time, I wondered if the plane oddities could be explained by fake video having been shown. However, over time I came to realise that it was again more complicated than it first appeared. Several researchers such as Ace Baker, I know you're probably not familiar with these names, Simon Shack and Jeff Hill, who had developed or supported video fakery ideas and presentations, went on to attack or ridicule the idea that the towers were turned to dust by an energy weapon. In 2012, my friend Richard D. Hall published a comprehensive video analysis of his own, which showed that the planes did appear to have followed the correct path, because I haven't really talked about how, you know, there are about 26 videos shot of that second plane crash, Flight 175. And people said that some of the videos showed it going in a level flight, some said it flew in a dive bomb path. But if you do an analysis, as Richard D. Hall did, and it's on the internet, you can go and watch it for free, the paths do actually all match up. This seemed to indicate that some type of image projection or hologram technology was used to create planes which looked real, and they could even be filmed, but they did not behave like a real plane when they crashed. Now, I know that sounds a bit far out, but here's a bit more. There's a couple of other shots of the Flight 175 crash. You see the delayed fireball as well on that shot. Where did the wing go? Probably just an insect or a bird. Probably. So you can see certain anomalies in some of these video clips. Quite a few others have been pointed out. But why did that plane look black when it was illuminated in full sunshine? If you look at the angle of the sun, doesn't make sense. Now, when you actually look at the witness accounts as well, which I did, on the New York Times website, there are 500 accounts from first responders, people who went to treat people at the World Trade Center site. I managed to establish in 2007 that at least 96 witnesses were near the World Trade Center within half a mile at the time of the second impact, in other words, the Flight 175 alleged crash. And a further 21 witnesses were inside one of the World Trade Center buildings at the time of the second crash. This gave a total number of 117 witnesses who were near or inside the World Trade Center buildings at the time of the second crash. Only 19 of the witnesses near the World Trade Center reported actually seeing Plane 2 impact. Therefore, only 20% of those people saw the second plane. And those were people that were right there. I could verify they were there. Only 20 of the witnesses near the World Trade Center reported actually hearing Plane 2 before the impact. Only 21% of the witnesses heard the second plane out of the sample of 117. That's not 20% of people, all the people that were there. It's people that I could verify were there and had given a testimony. Only 8 of the witnesses near the World Trade Center reported actually seeing and hearing the plane. 8.3% of witnesses saw and heard the second plane. That's a very low number. Very low number. And when you read these accounts, as I did, from the account of Scott Holowak, which is numbered 911-0114, At that time, Chief Ganshi was behind me, and he thought there was another explosion in the North Tower. And that's when I turned around and said, Chief, listen, there is a second plane that hit the tower. He was like, no, we have another explosion. I said, no, Chief, I witnessed it. I watched the plane hit the other tower. He was like, are you sure? I said, Chief, I'm 100% positive. I watched the second plane hit the other tower. So they stood next to each other and they can't agree whether a plane crashed. It's a bit strange, isn't it? And even this one, David Sandvik, we start heading down the block and we get down to, I guess, about Church Street and the second plane hit. And I remember just being underneath. I never heard the motor of the plane, the sound of the engines. We just heard the explosion. You felt the explosion. And looking straight up and seeing that fireball that you see on the news, but we're underneath it looking up now at it. Huh? He's right underneath it and he doesn't hear the plane. This never gets talked about. So I put it to you that those plane crashes were not real. People reported seeing planes, as you just heard there, and there are many others. I've actually spoken personally to two people that were there. One guy was in line of sight of flight 175. You know, he never saw it. Another person came that I spoke to on the phone. They were right underneath it. They saw it. They were coming up out of the subway station and they saw it. So how do you explain this, these glaring anomalies? I think it's to do with image projection. But let's kind of look a little bit more. I've already talked a little bit more about this. I'm going to talk more about it now. The destruction of the World Trade Center. This is the aftermath. But what's here? This paper. Look at this paper. So these towers are meant to have burned down. Some say there were bombs planted. Yet we've got all this paper blowing through the streets. Why is that? How is that possible? Look at this turning to dust. How were all the girders destroyed with no fiery explosions seen? I've shown you this picture already. Where'd the building go? Here's another one. This is an ambulance. This is in front of the buildings, World Trade Center buildings. How come it's still in pretty good shape? It's not been crushed. It's actually still visible. It's not covered up with debris, let alone crushed. How is this possible? You have 2 1/4 mile high buildings above where this ambulance was. Yet, you've got the doors a bit bent. The roof's not bashed in. The roof looks pretty good shape. How is that possible? It is only possible because the buildings turned to dust before they hit the ground, about 90% of the buildings. Now, people say to me, Andrew, no, that's just nonsense because all the debris ended up in the basements. That's where it is. Because there were 7, it is true that there were 7 stories below ground level. I think it went 70 feet down below ground level. There were stores there. You could buy, you know, stores you could buy stuff. There was a Warner Brothers store where you could buy life-size Warner Brothers figures. Oh, the debris went into the basements, Andrew. Did it? Well, here's a guy walking around. There's actually, if you study this image closely, there's a pool of water here. How is this possible? Can you see any much debris here? You can see some. Is it full up? Well, they're walking around looking for survivors. This was on 19th of September this was taken. This is in the sub-basement level. And what about these cars? This was about a quarter of a mile from the World Trade Center on Franklin D. Roosevelt Drive, FDR Drive. This tire's inflated. This tire is just not present. This is like a new paintwork, but here it's all wilted. There's such high heat. Well, apparently it's high heat, but somehow this upholstery is unburned. It's a bit mucky, but not melted or anything. How is this possible? See the paint there? Apparently all heated up here, but what's going on? The trunk's open. Why is the trunk open? What's happened there? Even more strange. This is from Dr. Wood's presentation. This is the toasted parking lot, as we call it. Look at these cars here. I've got a snapshot image here for you in a minute. So this was just before, I think this was just before one of the towers came down. Or turned to dust. Went poof. Some people have claimed that these cars were burned and then they were moved, they were towed. This proves that that is untrue. In some cases, some probably were moved. What happened to these cars? If you study this image closely, you can see that one remains in pretty good shape. And there's another one here. Just trying to remember which one it is. Some of these stay in pretty good shape. That one's in fairly good shape as well. But these are completely toasted. This has all been wiped. This has all been destroyed here. So what is happening to these cars? This was about three or four blocks away from the World Trade Center. Yes, these look pretty okay as well. So we're getting like waves of destruction here. What the hell has happened here? That caused by a plane crash? And a tower coming down? Is this caused by a plane crash and a building going on fire? Do you think? Engine blocks all gone? That tire has turned into goo. Still got a bit of paintwork here, but that's completely wrecked. Here, we've got a strange hole there. This is all intact, pretty good shape. This is all completely destroyed. What's happened to it? Again, back of the truck in good shape. Why is this all rusted at the front? This was taken about 3 days afterwards, I think. I forget the exact date. It's on Dr. Wood's website. How can steel rust this fast? How can it rust this quickly? I want to see some other strange things. What about this? Why is this car upside down? Why is this car upside down? Why is this fire truck upside down? How did these vehicles get upside down on 9/11? Oh, it was a big wind. Power came down. Whoosh, wind. Leaves are on the trees, folks. Wouldn't the leaves have got blown off the trees? Something very, very strange was going on. Again, looking at the details. Only one pane is broken in that particular pane. Why? How did that happen? This has all been wiped out here, this frontage. This is all okay. If you look at the brickwork, it's all fairly okay. Another one. Only one pane is broken. Huh? How can a projectile only go through one pane? This wasn't done by projectiles. It was actually done by a longitudinal wave. Now, we came across the work of John Hutchison. I'm jumping around. I haven't got a lot of time here. This is, again, condensed a bit from the full presentation. I think I might just play the chip clip. But John Hutchison is an experimental physicist. He hasn't been to university. He's just developed his own intuitive understanding of electronics, electrical engineering, and he's able to create effects like this. He's got £500 of metal samples like this. He creates effects including jellification of metal, bending and fracturing of metal, lift or levitation, transmutation, one metal changing into another, fuming, not necessarily smoke, disappearance of samples, fusing of dissimilar materials such as metal and wood.
You've obviously been playing with this for a long time, and I know you've been through the wars, you know, at various times with having your equipment confiscated. And things like this. I believe that's happened at least twice. Is that correct?
No. Main time was 1990 when I was in Europe. It was the Canadian government that took the entire laboratory and tried to make a secret operation, but the newspapers found out about it, published the news.
Okay.
And yeah, that was that I hadn't read it before.
Okay. And one of the things that you know, we wanted to just check with you, that I believe it was in 1983, there was a person called Colonel John Alexander, in fact, who'd come to see you because he learned about what you were doing. I wondered if you could sort of mention a little bit about that.
Oh, yes, Colonel John Alexander was 1983. He came with a team from Los Alamos, and he said to me that we're expecting a threat from, as I recall, a threat from the Soviet Union.
Okay.
And the concerns for the American government. So I gave the demonstrations for about 4 months working with the team. And unfortunately, there was some effect that happened, and some scientists didn't. It seemed like the equipment was sabotaged, and I learned from yet another lieutenant colonel that a fellow by the name of Bob sabotaged the entire project. So John Alexander was a little upset over that. He brought in another team from Donald Douglas to do a clear, not classified report, which I still have that report. And after that, of course, the Canadian government did their experiments and kept it a matter of national security.
Of course. And I think that's, you know, really interesting that we, you know, we do know that people in the military are well aware of what you've been doing. You know, it's not as if you have been, you know, working away totally as, like a hermit. They're fully aware of what you've been doing. We understand one of the key things is that in many cases when you start your experiments, you can switch off the power and the effect that you're generating will continue.
Well, we're trying to do a parallel here, I believe, and when I switch off the equipment, sometimes there's metal samples that have been analyzed on that Planck Institute that seems to be accelerated in time, ahead of time. And crystalline structures are always changing very fast, and the magnetic properties are changing extremely fast. So this is in regards to when I basically shut down the power. These samples, which are many of them, tend to alter ongoing. The energy in the equipment has been measured at 100 to 400 watts. When I was giving a demonstration for main news, the newscast accidentally chopped the extension cord in half by accident and shut down the entire lab. So that's 400 watts, the lowest power. And if I'm using more modern equipment, it's, of course, I'm up to 80,000 watt energy to drive the systems. The mayor of this city came here and he's a couple years ago talking with me, a friendly fellow mayor, right, of Westminster. And he was talking about these new reports of concrete cracking up as well as citizens in distress. And it seems when I do an experiment like I did for National Geographic TV and film, it blew up the elevator so they couldn't get their equipment down after the experiment. And just recently, for Fox TV, I was doing an experiment, and then some plumbing exploded downstairs. But I take consideration, too, that when I was doing the McDonnell Douglas experiment, we had a water main explosive out in the street. So that's written up in some of the text. I've been through a lot of mischief.
I think one point I wanted to just dwell on for a second is that, you know, Judy and I, we watch the internet forums quite closely, and there are quite a number of people who are saying, you know, oh, John Hutchison can't reproduce the effects which he's, you know, makes. And I wonder, you know, what your response with that would be. I almost feel silly asking the question, but,
I honestly think they don't listen to radio or watch TV or read books, because I've been doing this quite regularly for Fox TV in 2000 and onward up for Christian Productions as well as National Geographic TV and Stone. And onward with many, many different crews have come and gone out of here, and I can sit down, turn everything on, and guarantee I have an effect within 5 minutes. So whatever they're reading is maybe so old that they just don't bother researching. That's what I feel.
Now, my point in showing that clip was twofold, really. I've spoken to John Hutchison. He actually submitted an affidavit in a court case related to what I'm showing you to do with the destruction of the World Trade Center. But you heard him speaking, perfectly open about what he does. People say that what he does is fakery. You saw when the things were lifting off. People on the internet will claim, oh, what he's doing is, he's got things in a cardboard box with a camera filming it, and then he's got some magnets. He turned the box upside down, and then you remove the magnet, and the things drop down in the box. But of course, because the camera's upside down, it looks like they're levitating. So that's what you'll see on the internet, and you'll also hear this talk about a toy UFO that he did a fake on that. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that is just all distraction again. John Hutchison has submitted an affidavit for a court case to say that what he's done in his experiments is real. Alright? Why would he do that? Why would he want to perjure himself if he's a faker or a fraudster? He doesn't make any money from this. What you're seeing here is an experiment he did. Actually, I got the date wrong. It's November 2006 he did this, not 2007. This is trying to do a reproduction of the Philadelphia experiment from the 1943 legendary mythical experiment. He was beaming this area with the toy boat, which I think was about 2 or 3 feet long, with electrical magnetic fields, alternating electrical fields, and microwave radiation in various combinations, which he has. He uses 2 tons of equipment to generate these effects. And what you'll see in a moment is when he switches off, you can see the water's sort of, you know, rippling. But then you'll see the water rippling stops in a minute because he switches off the equipment. But what you'll see is you'll see these strange effects. These strange fires. What's burning here? What is this burning? This is exactly what we're seeing at the World Trade Center. There's metal apparently on fire, but paper not burning. These car fires here. Huge raging car fires, a few inches away, paper's not burning. We call it weird fires. What's causing these weird fires? That's an effect that John Hutchison has created on multiple occasions. This was an experiment where he actually managed to bend a 3-inch diameter solid, that's not a pipe, it's a solid copper beam. This is a beam from the aftermath of the World Trade Center destruction. Notice any similarity? These are some aluminium bars that John had subjected to his beaming experiments. This is a beam from the World Trade Center destruction. Notice any similarities at all here and here? On repeated occasions, and you'll find quite a number of YouTube videos from John, I've put these, most of these, on a website called thehutchisoneffect.com. Again, if anybody wants any of these links, afterwards just go to checktheevidence.com. If you can remember that, click on the contact button and I can send you links to all of this information so you can check it out, form your own view of it. You'll see in a minute that this can, well, it's already actually flexing slightly. You see the top is moving without the bottom moving. You just see, it's not that obvious. But you'll see there's a slight flexing, as if it's starting to sort of lose its structure, but enough it goes. Flies up. Down again. And I've got some other video, I won't show you them all. This is, another experiment with a Red Bull can. Notice any similarities to this picture that I showed you earlier? Coincidental? Wow.
South American Downs, of course, the street. But something in the back of my head just said, run. And as I hit the corner of Liberty Street, it was almost being picked up by a tornado. It was like being picked up by the wind. It had substance. It was like night, but it had a solid feel to it. It was like gravel, hot gravel. And just picked me up and tossed me about a block. I just, at 1 second I was running, and the next second I was airborne. And I lost my glasses, I lost my cell phone, I lost my pager, but managed to hold on to both cameras.
But it threw me for a block.
I was back in at Ground Zero last week and walked the area where I have a pretty good recollection of where I was and where I wound up. And it was just under a city block.
It was warm, and it picked me up. leaning up against the wall of the building that was, you were picked up off the ground.
Physically
picked up off the ground.
I remember an explosion. At that point, I got knocked out. I don't remember anything. Then I got up, and I looked out the window because the windows exploded, and the street below came in.
Anthony talked about the survivors from stairwell B. One guy's coming down the stairs and his hat starts lifting off. Fireman. Why would that happen? Why would your hat lift off? A heavy fire helmet. Not, you know, a paper, sort of cloth hat. I realised I couldn't get out from under the collapse. I dove under an ESU truck that was facing north on the west side of West Street. I dove under that and waited for the building to come down. When the building did come down, I actually thought I was trapped. And the truck was blown off me, pushed off me, I guess. It was not there. At that point, I was really just shocked. I was just really shocked and didn't know what was going on at that point. I didn't know. I was really, really shocked. Huh? So he drives under a truck and then it's gone? How does that happen? While we're walking, I realise that we have only two people. We only have two people. I see my vehicle. The seats are covered. I've still got my bag. I hold it like a trophy, like people collect basketballs. I haven't touched whatever the force was. It was so strong that it went inside of the bag. A force that went in his bag. Huh? These are all in the witness counts from 9/11. The witness counts that I can almost guarantee that just about everybody in this room has never heard before. Yet you can go and read them on the New York Times website. I can send you the links if you want to read them yourself. This is John Hutchison's experiment on a stainless steel bar. This is that truck I showed you earlier. You can see the rust on this stainless steel bar. Now then, so there is a relationship between what happens in John Hunter's experiments and what happened at the World Trade Center. Dr. Wood, who's gathered all this evidence, and I'm pretty much quoting from her stuff, I haven't really discovered much of this, if anything, myself. I can't take a lot of credit for the actual discovery of the evidence. But Dr. Wood, she was looking at this strange sort of fumes coming up from the aftermath of the destruction of the World Trade Center. She wanted to find out why this dust was going up and up and up. She talks a little bit about in her presentations. So why have we got this strange, the black fumes go west and the white fumes go south. Why? That's what she was looking for. More of these pictures, but look what she found. She found this picture. This is the plume of material going from the World Trade Center. But what's this? No one will talk about this. This is Hurricane Erin. It was, as you see, a fair way from New York. It was actually about 500 miles from the eye to New York. You can see the outer bands of the hurricane were going on to Cape Cod. While the events of 9/11 were unfolding. You can see this odd eye, the nucleus or the eye. It's got a pentacle shape. Just pointing that out really. Don't really know why, but what I can show you, and you can go and verify this on the Hurricane Data Center if you wish. All the weather people that I've spoken to will not discuss it. They will not talk about this. Hurricane Erin, the most studied hurricane of the 2001 season. It was given a name on the 1st of September, coming across the Atlantic. Went up to Bermuda, hit Bermuda on the 7th, did a bit of damage there. That was reported by CNN. And they said, CNN said, don't worry about it, it's going out to sea, forget about it. And it did go out to sea in a straight line for 4 days. And guess what? 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11, 9/11/01, just before the towers were destroyed, it's the closest it's going to get to New York City. And it's travelling at its slowest, you know, sort of storm system speed. And it's at its widest expanse. Next day, makes a right-hand turn and heads off out towards Newfoundland. Why would that be? Why would that be? There are, of course, two possibilities. Either it was a coincidence, or it wasn't a coincidence. So I'll leave you to make that decision for yourself as to whether it was a coincidence, but I'll tell you a few more things. So that's showing the size of the storm as it moved. That was done by Dr. Wood. Now, I think that's pretty important evidence myself. I think it's world-changing, literally world-changing, in just about every sense of the phrase. I wrote a press release about that discovery. Dr. Wood discovered that evidence in February 2008. That's over 7 years ago. I've been talking about it for 7 years. 7 years. I wrote a press release about, we did a little study of that, just the hurricane data. Posted it on her website, still there. And I wanted to post it on an alternative news website, not BBC, nothing like that. This is called Op-Ed News. I wrote a press release about it and I posted it on their website. It was deleted. It was censored by John Moffat. Dr. Wood does not follow any of the basic tenets of science, such as performing experiments and collecting and analysing data. Where are her graphs and tables of data? She is not a scientist, she is a crackpot. I have read Dr. Wood's web pages and they are disorganised, rambling, lacking any semblance of scientific data. That's what this guy, who was a science editor of an alternative news website, said. And the press release that I tried to post was deleted. Why would that be, do you think? He could have verified that data for himself at the Hurricane Data Center. Didn't need to go to Dr. Wood's website. Now, these are some effects which are seen following tornadoes and hurricanes. How did this pole get through the tree? How did this plywood get through the tree that's separated here? How are these straws getting into the wood? Now, they'll claim, if you read up on this, that what happens is you have a strong wind, it makes a tree bend, it opens up a gap in the bark, the straw flies in, and then the wind goes away, the thing clamps shut again, and that's how you get the straw. That's the official explanation. Do you think that explains that? And I've got some other pictures as well. Some of that's from Hurricane Andrew. This is what John Hutchinson did with his metal samples. This is a stainless steel knife merged seamlessly with an aluminium block. He's cut this through to see where the boundary was. Is with an angle grinder. Why are these two cars undamaged and that one isn't? How did this car get on the fence and balance like this? How is that possible? You've seen these before. Now, one thing I want to tell you about hurricane is what we think it's why it was there is to do with field effects. John Hutchison uses a Tesla coil in his experiments. A Tesla coil is like a Van de Graaff generator a little bit. It's a little bit more sophisticated than that. But you can generate a million volts difference between the top and the bottom. Funnily enough, that's exactly what happens with a storm system. You get an electrical potential building up in the storm cell. Now then, Dr. Wood looked at magnetometer data as well. This is all in the book and on her website. This is a measurement of how north or south the Earth's magnetic field is dipping. Look at 846. This graph is at its minimum. These are from Alaska. Magnetometers in Alaska. The dip is at 8:46. What happened at 8:46 on 9/11? The first hole appeared in the World Trade Center. Exactly 8:46. So do you think it's possible for a plane crash to affect the Earth's magnetic field measured 3,500 miles away in Alaska 20 minutes earlier? Do you think that's possible? Because that's what the evidence shows. I've already spoken about how I would say that wasn't a real plane crash. That fireball that you saw wasn't caused by a plane crashing into it, because the plane that appeared to be crashing into it, I think, was some type of image projection. Crazy and wild though that sounds. Now, again, I'm skipping through a lot of bits and pieces here, which I'm sorry if it comes across as, this is all very strange and I'm not quite getting my head around it. I appreciate that, but we haven't got a lot of time. I'm hoping you will go off and study this more if you're interested and motivated enough to do so. But what happened with 9/11 investigation was that NIST, who's the National Institute for Standards and Technology, they were paid $16 million, or given $16 million, to write reports about the destruction of the World Trade Center. And that amounted to 10,000 pages. You can download them all from the internet. I did download them all 10,000 pages. I haven't read all 10,000 pages, but I have searched for key terms. Dr. Wood realised that these reports were fraudulent. She submitted a request for correction, which is a legal requirement in the US where you can get these reports to be corrected. So she wanted these reports corrected to reflect that the towers didn't collapse, they turned to dust. That's what the report should have described happening. They didn't describe that. Now, these Ketan cases, again, I could talk for probably another hour just about this, but they ended up being dismissed. And the judge's ruling also mentioned the moon landings and the assassination of JFK in the judge's ruling on these cases, which, of course, has nothing to do with the towers turning to dust. Didn't matter whether JFK never existed or we never landed on the moon. It's got nothing to do with what happened to the towers, which is what her case was about. And the appeal was dismissed, etc., but we're running short on time. Now, I just wanted to talk a bit about the cover-up. We're running out of time. I joined this group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth. I was invited by this guy, Jim Fetzer, and this guy, Steve Nee Jones, because I was involved with the Open University. I was speaking out about 9/11. I had a bit of a brain on my head because I'd done these equations of motion. And this guy, I made a DVD of his presentation. I assumed he was honest. He's a physics professor from Brigham Young University. He started speaking out about 9/11 just after the NIST reports came out. And he was saying that thermite was used to destroy the towers. But eventually, I realised that this guy was a liar. And he'd misled me. And he'd used me to put out disinformation, which I've written about in my book. And eventually I'd come to call these groups, because now you've got all these 9/11, you go on the internet, you find lawyers for 9/11 Truth.
Sorry, Andrew, he got you to put out disinformation.
Yes. I'll explain that in a minute. You've got lawyers for 9/11 Truth, scientists for 9/11 Truth, pilots for 9/11 Truth, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, there's various groups for 9/11 Truth. How about liars for 9/11 Truth? How about that group? That's the group which I find is what most of the groups out there should be called. I was used to put out disinformation by editing a video clip which Jones was claiming was showing the action of thermite. And it was just, it was an interesting video, but it wasn't showing the action of thermite. It was misleading. Right? But I offered to edit it together for him because I knew how to do video editing. And I thought he was being honest. But when you actually look at this clip and think about it, it's misleading. So he got me to put out misleading information. Not totally untrue, but it's misleading. It's disinformation. And I tell the story of that in my book. Now he talks about thermite and thermate and nanothermite. You might have heard some of this if you've looked into this already. Jones was suggested that thermite was used to melt the steel columns to make the towers fall down. That's why I made this clip. He talked about molten metal. That was talked about for well over a year. I'll show you the clip. Oh, this isn't playing properly. Something gone wrong with my video codec or something. But this was the clip of this molten metal coming out, and they asked me to edit these two things together. And it's actually a cut. There's a misleading cut. But this is what thermite looks like when it reacts. I know it's not playing properly. I don't know why that is. It's strange. But it's a huge, massive. That's just like a few. That's probably about 50 grams of thermite. And they've claimed that tons of thermite was used to destroy the towers. So you scale that up to tons. That's about 100 grams, 200 grams of thermite going off there. You scale that up to tons. Is that what's happening in this? Can you see a bright orange flame setting this off? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But I assume this guy was legit. And he wasn't. So here's some stills from this video. So what happened was, this Jones and Fetzer, they formed this group and then they split up. Jones' form went on one side and Fetzer went on the other. They didn't do any court action. Jones submitted a request for correction to NIST, like Judy Wood did. But in that paper, they didn't mention thermite. They didn't mention molten metal. What they did mention later on was this theory that thermite, thermate, superthermite, nanothermite, paint-on-thermite, active thermitic materials, iron-rich microspheres, but thermite, or any of its variants, they do not turn buildings to dust. They cut it into chunks. The chunks come down, they make a seismic signature, they break the bathtub. I haven't even talked about that. So basically what I'm just going through very quickly here is these guys in this scholars group, it was a setup to attract people like me to keep us, an eye on us, keep us under control. I haven't really got, we're running short on time. But what I found in 2007 is that this guy, Stephen E. Jones, had a history. And I put this up in big flashing letters, hoping that you might take this one thing away with you tonight. There is a link between the free energy cover-up and the events of 9/11. And this guy, Stephen E. Jones, is one of the key people.
Since Pons and Fleischman were both well aware of the pitfalls of premature publicity, why would they bypass the accepted conventions of the peer-reviewed system and announce their discovery through the media?
I was thinking these guys have no food. They know what they're doing. These are good scientists.
Prior to the 1989 announcement, Stephen E. Jones, a physics professor at nearby Brigham Young University, learned of Pons and Fleischman's work through an informant at the DOE. In a flagrant example of shameless opportunism, Jones insisted on going public quickly with comparatively much less clear results. Disparaging the excess heat claims of Fleischman and Pons, Jones' announcement would have effectively prevented the two scientists from patenting their process, a process they had developed on their own over long years of research.
So, I've shown you that very brief clip. Cold fusion is a nuclear energy phenomenon, which was discovered in 1989. It gave the possibility of getting energy for free, for nothing, from nowhere, almost from nowhere. You could put a little bit of energy in and you get a whole lot out. You don't burn any fuel. You don't have to get any horrible radioactive products. That was the potential discovery that Pons and Fleischman made in 1989. Stephen E. Jones, the chap I've just mentioned, who invited me personally into the 9/11 scholars group, coined the term cold fusion. He coined that term. I know some people probably never heard of cold fusion. I apologise for that. I'm trying to cover a lot of ground. But it's vitally important that you understand this. Because the whole world runs on energy. We don't, all this stuff about, you know, burning fossil fuels, it's a scam, it's a con. It's a total con. Which had been put upon us since the early 1900s, when all the oil companies got going in the 30s and 40s. Now, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, they've produced these reports that I've mentioned. Again, I'm skipping over a lot of things. I apologise for that. They used several big defence contractors in producing these reports: Science Applications International Corporation, Applied Research Associates being two of them, and they were sued by Dr. Judy Wood. Because they took money and produced a fraudulent report, right? NIST should have known that Applied Research Associates is a significant manufacturer of directed energy weapons systems or components thereof. They're actually involved in developing directed energy weapons. And so is Science Applications International Corporation. Another of their specialities is psychological operations, making an enemy believe something which isn't true. Boeing also manufactured the airborne laser. They were supplied information for the NIST reports. I'll leave out Norman Mineta. Norman Mineta is regarded as a truther, but he used to be the vice president of Lockheed Martin, which is a big defence contractor. Airborne laser. Architects and engineers, you'll come across this group on the internet. They will not talk about the things that I've told you about. They will claim that Dr. Judy Wood has no evidence. They will claim that the spire that I showed you is just dust that's gathered and it isn't turning to dust at all. They have a plane in their logo. People that talk about Judy Wood's research, Judy Wood's book, etc., have been removed from their group. They've been removed from the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That's why I call them liars for 9/11 Truth.
Now, with Judy Wood, it's not going to acknowledge any of that evidence. It's just hand waving away that she's not practicing science, she's practicing witchcraft. Go ahead.
That's a snatch from an interview. He's the leader. He's been on television, he's been on BBC, he's just been on a European tour, talking about the destruction of the World Trade Center. That's what he says about that book. Yeah, I know that he's got a copy of that book, Where Did the Towers Go? He claims that Judy Wood ignores all this evidence of thermite. No, she doesn't. It's all in the book. It's explained. You can see it on the context page. This guy's an out-and-out liar. He is lying about the research that he is actually involved with bringing out to the public. I haven't got time to cover Henrik Palmgren, really.
Is this polarising debate so much?
Yeah, he talks about polarising debate. I thought that guy was honest. Some people that have visited my website, army.mil, nasa.gov, Los Alamos National Laboratories, where they developed the A-bomb, they've all been to my website. Raytheon, big defence contractor, or Judy Wood's website. Kinetic, they've been as well. All the military ones. So what I've come to conclude, again, I've skipped across this very quickly, for which I apologise. This is a bit of an experiment, merging two presentations together. And it works some ways, in some ways it doesn't work as well as I hoped. Multipurpose crime was 9/11. Destroyed the aging World Trade Center buildings, big insurance payout. It created the war on terror to keep people in fear, which is what's still going on. Now we've got ISIS, because Al-Qaeda's run out of gas. Allowed support for illegal wars to be built and gotten. Tested advanced black directed energy weapons technology, which no one will talk about. That's why you've never heard probably anything that I've been talking about tonight. It just sounds woof. You know. Tested how easily people can be fooled. Now they know that the directed energy weapon works pretty well. It turns buildings to dust. This was all planned, as was the 9/11 Truth Movement. That was all planned as part of the cover-up. They can use it with impunity and up the ante for the next false flag operation, which some people say is they're going to fake an alien invasion, bizarre as that may sound. They could do it. They could do it. And there's been a bit more talk. I mean, there was Stephen Hawking said about a year ago that he thinks that aliens are coming and, attack the Earth because we're not looking after the environment. Stephen Hawking, the famous physicist, he said that, I think, in an article or in an interview couple of years ago. That's what it was quoted as saying. So gargantuan lies are being told by most, if not all, top level officials. If you bring anybody, anything that I've told you up tonight to any your MP, they'll just think you're nuts. They won't take time to look at this. Because if they did, it would undermine everything they stand for. There is no democracy. We're beholden to some secret power. The attacks on Iraq and Afghanistan were completely and utterly illegal. They weren't involved, there's no discernible basis other than as part of a covert agenda which has little or nothing to do with spreading democracy or fighting terrorism. They're all just cover stories. Because people think, people are afraid of what Muslim fundamentalists can do. Watch The Power of Nightmares from 2004, Adam Curtis's film. Shows you how Al-Qaeda was created. 9/11 and 7/7 were psychological operations to dupe the public into accepting aggression against a framed enemy. Hutchison effect-like technology was employed in the destruction of the World Trade Center. I'm only giving you a tiny bit of that. There's quite a lot more in Dr. Wood's book and on my website. Again, people want links, do contact me. Whoever controls the energy supply controls the destiny of the human race. I personally cannot ignore the links between the energy cover-up and 9/11 through Stephen E. Jones. Again, I've just mentioned him briefly. What could we do with this technology if it was used for peaceful purposes? That's what they don't ever want anybody to get in their heads. That's why it's all Al-Qaeda, ISIS, immigration problems, all that stuff. If you consider the occurrence of Hurricane Erin being closest to New York City on 9/11, and you ignore things like chemtrails, which is we have time to talk about that, we can say that weather modification technology is real and operational. The whole climate change debate, it's all a scam, it's a farce. People have admitted they've lied over climate change. That was admitted in 2009 in the Hadley Climate Gate scandal. That was in all the papers. They admitted lying about it. It's all a scam. It's all a sideshow. All this fossil fuel, it's just, you know, it doesn't make any difference. They can control the weather already. They did it on 9/11. That's what I now have come to understand. I don't expect people to follow it all in this short presentation I've given. So the danger for the powers that be is people making connections between 9/11, energy, weather modification and secret or space technology programs. Again, I've got more presentations about that both on DVD here and on my website. So, as I said, Amnesty International, you'd expect them to talk about 9/11. I wrote to them years ago, they won't talk about it. Liberty won't talk about it. Political parties won't talk about it. Stop the War leadership, they won't talk about it. None of these groups will talk about anything that I've told you tonight. So, it's down to you, everybody. It's down to you. You just have to take this information and do what you think you can with it. It might just be integrating it into your own understanding of the world. It might just be ignoring it. I don't know what you're going to do. It's up to you. But I've tried to do various things. Mainly, it's been involved with doing talks like this when I'm asked to do so. This was JJ that asked me to do this talk. I didn't sort of say, oh, let's go to Shrewsbury and do a talk. I was invited to do this. So all I can say to you is take the information, research it for yourself, see what you can think of it, see what you think of it, see what you can make of it, and pass it on. And if you want some help with doing that, again, I've got DVDs sold at cost price. I've got stuff online, so you can just send people links to my website. If you've got email, just use email. But that's basically it. I've covered a lot of ground. I appreciate you sticking with me to the bitter end. Books, as I already talked about. That's my website. I've got leaflets. If you want to take a leaflet just for the website, leaflets are free. I will take, it's getting quite late obviously now, but I will take some questions. Thanks very much for listening anyway, even if there's no questions. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah,
I'll just get some more, but carry on. Well, that will become clearer if you read some of the articles I've written. Ace Baker, to clarify to the audience, there are two figures that have done research into the so-called no planes issue. This I've talked about the plane crashes not being real. The other main argument is that what happened was fake video was shown on the TV. Right, so all the video that was shown on the TV was all fake. And Ace Baker has claimed this, Simon Shack has claimed this, these are internet researchers. And so you're asking me, are these guys sort of misleading us deliberately, if I've understood the question properly? In other words, are they knowingly part of the cover-up, or are they just disagreeing with me, I suppose? My conclusion is that they are both part of the cover-up. They're not just disagreeing with me for reasons of ego or evidence. They are knowingly putting out false information. I'd say that's true in both cases, and I've got evidence which I think strongly indicates that is correct. And it's in my book and on my website.
Just briefly, two questions on the video. The BBC, when they announced the collapse of World Trade Center 20 minutes before it happened.
Yes.
And I've seen multiple videos of what sound like bombs going off on the base.
Yes.
By the firefighters. What's your take on it?
Yes. So the buildings, building number 7, which was destroyed at 5:20, the BBC announced that that building had been destroyed at 5 o'clock in a shot with Jane Stanley, who was the BBC news reporter. She was in the shot, and building number 7 was in the background. It was still there, yet they'd announced it had been destroyed. So some people claim that they knew what was going to happen and that story had got out early. The BBC have denied this, and they said that it was just a cock-up in the confusion of all the events. So I don't know what the truth is. You could say it was a cocker, but it is very, very strange that they should report that Building 7 was destroyed 20 minutes before it actually was destroyed. But we can't really go much further than that. We don't know. That report originally came out on CNN, and it appears that the BBC copied it. The CNN story came out about 5 to 4 or 4:30, and it appears it then got rebroadcast on the BBC. That's about all I know about that. And the other question was the bombs in the building. Bombs in the building, I think there is another explanation for that. The third thing you've got to understand, obviously, is that everything that goes boom is not a bomb. Bombs do go boom, but everything that goes boom is not a bomb, right? So you can put an egg in your microwave oven, switch it on, the microwaves will start working, and the egg will explode, and you hear a bang. Doesn't mean there's a bomb in your microwave. What we think was happening with the exploding tanks is, as the energy effects from what this effect was, like the Hutchinson effect, were starting to work on the metal, because it appears that the buildings were prepped for about an hour before they turned to dust. People in the buildings were actually reporting high heat and being sort of cooked. And it appears the buildings were being prepped. So as part of that process, some of the metal in the walls of things like fire extinguishers or these pressurized toilet systems that they had in the towers or other pressurized tanks which held water, they pumped up water in stages, 20 floors at a time or something, and had various storage tanks, they could have exploded and created explosion sounds.
So what's the shoots though of gas and thing you see?
Yeah, that's covered in the Weather Towers Go book. That appears to be, if you look at it carefully, it looks more like a squirting rather than an explosion. That could have been, again, water tanks exploding and the water being evaporated by the process or made to squirt out in some way. That's what I think that was. Any other questions?
Just quickly ask, you kept talking about thermite, and I was just wondering, is it the powder stuff that people claim that when it hit on impact it explodes, or is it something else?
I don't quite follow you.
I've seen things where people claim that the building was lined with a powder, and when it hit on impact it explodes.
Well, it is claimed that that all kinds of things were in the buildings. Paint on thermite was one thing. Maybe that's akin to the powders that you mentioned, that it was somehow put onto the steel. Well, there's no real evidence for that, because any explosive process, whether it's from a powder that's, you know, put on, or a material that's put on, bombs planted, nuclear devices has also been proposed. I haven't mentioned that tonight, but that's another of the other stories that's out there. Dmitry Karlazov. All of those processes would have cut the building into chunks in some way. The girders would have been cut into sections. Those chunks would have fallen to the ground. Those impacts on the ground would have created a seismic signature which was commensurate with the amount of material hitting the ground. There was no commensurate seismic signature. It was about 2.3. It was as if the lower 20 stories of the building had hit the ground and the other 90 stories didn't hit the ground from looking at the seismic signature. So even if you say they were explosive plan, well, what did they do? They didn't. They must have turned the building to dust as well. You can actually see the steel pieces turning to dust. So you know that the explosions are irrelevant. You know, I mean, I say to people, maybe there were some bombs in the building. I can't prove there weren't, but I don't want to talk about. I'm not interested in bombs. I'm interested in what turned that steel to dust. That's what I'm interested in, because that is a classified weapon system. It was done. The technology exists to do that because it was done. We know that now. It's not a theory. We know that a technology exists to turn those towers into dust. And I encourage everyone to go and look at all the videos and see if they agree with me on that point. A technology exists to do what was done. Any other questions? No more questions? Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you very much for making it to the bitter end. Thank you.